always full of unspoken words. I was thinking, it's going to be hard to dance in this, I lie. It's going to be hard to see. We're here to be seen, not to see. She gets up and spreads her arms for me to unlace her stomacher, her sleeves, the skirt of her gown. She scratches her rounded belly through the fine linen shift. 5 months into her second pregnancy, she is more tired than with her first. She says this is a sign of a son. Her daughter, Princess Elizabeth, was easier to carry. She rests on her bed every afternoon before dinner, when the king is bathing and changing his clothes after his afternoon sports. What's the mask called? She asks, climbing into the great golden bed. The falconers. We dance as birds and then... Let me guess, she interrupts. The king and his friends come in disguised as falconers, and they catch us, and we dance with them, and then we all unmask, and I discover I am dancing with the king. I am amazed. I had no idea. I thought he was a handsome stranger. I give a trill of false laughter. You're so funny. I take off her embroidered shoes and peel down her fine silk stockings. This is honourable work for a lady in waiting to a queen, and the duty of a beloved sister-in-law. I am proud to be both. She closes her eyes. Surely not even he can believe I don't know my own husband. Of course, the king does not think that we believe a group of strange Savoy princes or unknown Russian lords in thick furs have burst into the queen's presence chamber. This is a game at court that we all play knowingly, and the prize is that the king shines. Among all the play acting is a single truth. The second son, the second-rate, second choice, has been transmuted into gold. He is heir. Over and over again we reenact this miracle, as if it were the greatest luck that Arthur the firstborn died, and Henry became heir and then king. 20 years ago, someone named him the handsomest prince in Christendom, and we have had to keep it up ever since. When I first came to court as a maid of honour, I was a lonely, bookish little girl of 11, and he was the 26-year-old, dazzling young husband to the beautiful queen, Catherine of Aragon. I fell in love with him, with her, with the glamour and beauty of the young royal couple. Then I fell in love with the whole Boleyn family. Anne, her ambitious brother George, her sweet-natured sister Mary, their parents, and the noble house of Howard, all professional courtiers as I wanted to be, in service to the most beautiful, powerful court in the world. Now, I am a Boleyn myself, married to George for almost half my life, rising with him to the title of Lady Rochford, nearly 30 years old. The queen I first loved and served is long gone, and the handsome king is in his prime. I have watched his need for praise grow from a young man's joy to a mature man's vanity, and I have learned, we all have, to fatten the compliments to match his hunger. Masking and revealing is a game to him, I say soothingly. He just wants the world to see that you choose him, even when he is disguised. You fall in love all over again. Well, I do, she says, with a sudden, wide, false smile. I am Anne, the most happy. I tuck the lambswool blanket around her. Thanks to Anne, I am First Lady at court, and I will be aunt to her baby, the next King of England, and first in the procession to carry him to his baptism. It will be a victory parade for us beautiful, clever women. We will have defeated the old lords and won the king from them. When will you announce you're with child? You announced Elizabeth much earlier. She shrugs. When I choose? Only the favoured few know that she is expecting a baby this autumn. She is right to delay sounding the starting bell for a new race of eager young women to the king's bed. Every slut at court will snatch at the king's attention